Welcome to Starfield Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 604-5562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website, www.talkshoe.com. Search for quality 17702. And remember to bring your Chrome browser. Yes, you can participate via the chat there, both the text chat, and you should be able to call in. But you need a Chrome browser or Chrome derivative like Brave. And also, of course, we also co-broadcast on the Twitch network. So go to twitch.tv/SFUOnCall. That's SFUONCALL. And if you want to contact me for any reason, my email address is SFUOnCall@gmail.com. That's SFUONCALL. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my podcast account is SFUOnCall. And, of course, my personal account is Paul Franz, PaulFranz, with the final one being, of course, my Franz Games account. If you want to follow that, talk about announcements of what's happening on Franz Games, and also client updates. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on various other feeds around the net, from iTunes to Google Play to also the SFUOnCall.com website itself. There's a podcast feed right there. So you can listen right on the website, or of course you can download it directly from, you can link into the podcast feed right there. Some quick news from A to B this week. Hailing Frequencies is now a combined newsletter. It contains news about Shapeways, SFB, and Federation Commander. Steve Cole was busy working on the Tholian Police Destroyer and Police War Destroyer variants for Federation Commander blogs. Also art for the Tholian Master Starship book and Call to Arms Starfleet book 2. Yes, he's been a busy man. Steve Petrick was busy working on the Tholian Master Starship book and also SFB updates. Gene was busy working on Hailing Frequencies and managing the pages on Facebook and also the Twitter feed. And also, of course, she was busy working on Hailing Frequencies also and keeping the customers happy. Moving on to the SFB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star Tournament has officially ended. Jack Taylor's Wynn Blackshark defeated Dana Minson's Orion Battle Raider. Congratulations, Jack, on your win. Moving on to the library report. Unfortunately, there hasn't been much done there, so the complete conversion still stays at 2,519, with yet to be converted at 811, leaving percentage complete at 75.65%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, as the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we have Barry, and of course Dave is in the chat room, and hopefully other people will show up. It'd be great to see, but you never know. So, how you doing, Barry?
Hey there. Fabulous. Getting ready for Gamers of Winter.
Awesome, awesome.
Still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah. So tonight I guess we're discussing the Magadium.
Yes, we are discussing the Magadium.
That's one of the interesting races. Or, yeah, empires, I guess. Is that the nomenclature we're using these days?
Mm-hmm.
And they're an insect race.
I did not realize that they're an insect race. I didn't have a chance to really read through all their full history and such.
Yeah. Well, in any case, they're the Bugs. And their ships are kind of interesting.
Yes, they are.
Now, they're much different than the Omegas. And actually, I think the LMCs tend to be somewhat balanced. Ken was very careful about balancing those empires. So they look like they play wacky, and they are very different than Alpha or even Omega empires. But they tend to be, they're not overpowering, but they're interesting, and they're not underpowered either, which is nice. And they tend to play very well.
So.
Their shields are completely different than everybody else's, which is huge. They've got several different weapon systems that are different. And a lot of things to discuss about them.
True.
So I guess I should start with their shields.
Yes, definitely.
And unlike regular... Go ahead.
Oh boy. You're cutting in and out.
You there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Sorry. Let me go to the headset. What's that?
Yes. Yeah, go to the headset.
Yeah. Okay, I'll turn on the headset. Is that, I know it works better for me. How is that for you? Is that better?
Yeah, it's better. It's a little more noisy, but it's a little more noisy, but it's better overall. Not cutting out.
Okay. Yep.
As much.
Okay. So the LMC shields, they have both inner and outer shields.
Right.
And the total number of shield boxes on an LMC cruiser is actually a fair number less than the number of shield boxes on an Alpha cruiser. So, if you look at total shield boxes, but that would be the same with, say, an Andromedan with your power absorbers, which can take a huge amount from the first volley. I think it's 60 points in the front, 40 in the rear, is a total of 100 points of damage versus Alpha shields, which are 90 over the front, but and 72 in the back, so 162 total boxes for an Alpha cruiser versus 100 on the Andromeda. Of course, the Andromeda gets its boxes back a lot quicker than the Alpha does. And also, for the first volley, at least in the front, it can take 60 instead of 30, which is huge. But after that, of course, it tends to degrade somewhat. The LMCs are more shield boxes than the Andromedans, but less than the Alphas. So I created a Magadium ship for SFB, which I never had to play with. It right out of the box, it was balanced. You have it? I can't see it.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I have your. I think Ken's, but I don't have yours up. Let me see if I can bring yours up.
Well, mine is essentially a copy of Ken's.
Oh, okay.
But the only thing is, I pre-out. Yeah, but if you look at mine, the one I did, I actually pre-allocated the missile loadout. So.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah. And I can't remember the exact numbers I used for the missile loadouts, but... So, for the outer shields, what are the number one, two, and six shields on the outers?
I mean, on the SSD? They are, looks like...
Yeah.
The rear shields are 10 apiece, and the front shields are 1... Or 14.
What's that?
The front ones are 14 apiece, and the rear ones are 10 apiece.
Yes, that makes sense. So that's obviously less than half the strength of an alpha shield, but there is something called the damage mitigation factor.
Oh, yes.
And what's a damage mitigation factor? Is or damage reduction factor.
Yeah, feel like VRF.
Or DRF.
VRF.
And what it is.
Volume reduction factor.
And what it is every single volley. Yes. Oh, VRF. Yes. Volume reduction factor. So every single volley is treated separately. Now, for example, if you have Hellbores. It's actually treated with other direct fire weapons. That's all considered a single volley. But if you had, like, things that happened in different segments of the impulse, like a drone or a plasma hit versus direct fire weapons, those would be separate volleys.
Mm-hmm.
So for each volley, all the odd damage points don't count up
right.
to half of the shield strength at the beginning of the volley. So, for a 14-point front shield, it can ignore up to 7 points of damage. So, if you were to take 14 points of damage on a 14-point shield, it really only counts for 7.
Mm-hmm.
The other 7 being reduced away. So, in reality, that 14-point shield is a 21-point shield. And it gets even better than that. If you hit it, say you hit it for 3 points, and then 3 points, and then 3 points, well, it gets reduced to 1 point, 1 point, 1 point. So even though you did 9 total damage over 3 volleys, only did 3 on the shield.
Mm-hmm.
So for small volleys, that damage reduction factor really makes that shield stronger. In fact, if you don't go over the damage reduction factor, the VRF, if you don't exceed its capabilities,
mm-hmm.
In any one particular volley, then that 14-point shield can stop 28. And depending on how it breaks, if you do odd numbers of points of damage,
right.
do quite a bit more of reduction. So, yeah, the shields are a lot stronger than they look. And now, the inner shields are just straight up. There's no volley reduction factor. So you have a 20-point front and a 20-point rear shield. So anything that gets through the outer shields hits the inner shield and does straight damage.
Right.
So with a 20-point front shield, for example, let's say I have 14-point front, number one,
mm-hmm.
and I took 60 points on that number one shield for a volley.
Right.
Well, the number one can take 21 points, and the inner shield can take an additional 20. So that 60-point volley only did 19 internals. So that's considerably stronger than an alpha shield. However, and you still have the number two and the number six. but they are weaker than an Alpha number two or number six.
Right, because you, now you have no inner shield. Yeah.
Right. You can reinforce the outer shields, but it's not quite as effective as the inner shield. Well, it's not quite as effective as an Alpha.
Mm-hmm.
So you pay 2 points of reinforcement for one shield box of reinforcement. But that shield box of reinforcement can count towards increasing your VRF.
Okay.
So if I put four points of power into reinforcing the number one shield, I have 2 point increase in that shield, and the VRF went up by one. So it can stop 3 more points of damage.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, so shield reinforcement is not as efficient as it is in an Alpha shield.
Right, right.
And the inner shields can't be reinforced at all.
Okay. Even if the outer shields are gone?
You can use general. Once the outer shields are gone, you have just general reinforcement, which is the same cost.
Okay, yeah, still, again, just two for one.
Yeah.
And real quick question on the general reinforcement. Is that applied to the outer shield?
General reinforcement occurs before anything else.
Okay, so
just like other general reinforcement.
Okay, so it's not like the general reinforcement is only applied to the inner shield, i.e., after you get past the outer shield. Okay, just want to make sure there's nothing special about it.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Yeah, general reinforcement gets hit first, then specific reinforcement, then the outer shields, then the inner shields. So you could theoretically have 4 layers of shields. Check me if I'm wrong, because it's been years since I looked at it. But mm-hmm. Do you have the LMC rule book in front of you?
I do. I got it in front of me.
Okay. I know shield repair, you can repair both the outers and the inners. I think the inners are actually cheaper to repair than everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
Are they?
Well, I'm seeing if it. I'm getting to that page and I just want to see if it's mentioned at all. Damage penetration, reinforcement, damage priority, repairs. Both layers of the Magellanic shields can be repaired, normal repair procedure. The cost of repair varies by the type. As a standard procedure, the specific field to be repaired must be noted with the energy, or repair points are allocated. Outer layer. The outer layer shield costs 2
yeah.
points for each box repaired, regardless of method used. The inner layer of the Magellanic shield costs 1 point for each box repaired.
Yes. Yes. The inner ones are half the cost to repair as outers, which is nice.
Here's something interesting.
Yeah.
You can do preemptive repair.
Preemptive shield repair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, wow. So you're going to get shield damage this turn, so you start to repair your shield before they're damaged.
And remember that if you think you're going to take a big volley, do the preemptive repair on the inner shield, which is cheaper to repair.
Right.
And it covers 3 shield facing.
Right. Agreed.
So that's kind of really nice.
Right.
Of course, yeah, you could have, but it's kind of like reinforcement, but you get it the following turn. But it's reinforcement that if you don't use it, you lose it.
Right.
On the other hand, it's reinforcement that you can do the front facing or the rear facing, which is much more flexible.
Right. And also, preemptive shield repair is good if you want to have a shield repaired at the end of the turn. So, in other words, going into the next turn, you don't have a down shield. But the penalty of this turn...
Correct. You know, remember that the...
You have less for shield reinforcement for this turn, and therefore you might take more internals.
Yes. Now, remember that inner shields cannot be reinforced, so... Oh, my inner shield's down. I'll repair it preemptively, but it's not reinforceable. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't quite buy you as much. But it's still one for one, which is
right.
Nice.
Agreed. At the very least, if you expect to have damage against your inner shield, it's worth the point of power to pre-allocate for a preemptive shield repair on that shield.
Yes. Yes.
Because if you do reinforcement for an outer shield, it's a 2-for-1 deal. You have to allocate 2 points of power for 1 point of reinforcement.
Right. Now, housing said that,
mm-hmm.
outer shield repair is more effective than for an alpha ship. Let's say I put 4 points of power into repairing my outer shields. Now, on an alpha ship, I get 2 boxes back. On a LMC ship, I get 2 boxes back and 1 VRF back. So, in that sense, even outer shield repairs are more effective for an LMC than an alpha.
Right.
So, it's less shields total, but much more shield flexibility on both, reinforcement flexibility. Mm-hmm. Repair flexibility is much, much better.
Right.
Of course, it's still expensive. And that pretty much covers the shields.
Mm-hmm.
So they've got pluses, they've got minuses. But as I pointed out, you have a lot less total. So on an alpha ship, I have 90 boxes total in my forward half. On this ship, I've got, in the outers, I've got 21 per, so that's 63 plus the 20 is 83. So I've got 83 total front half shielded, assuming that it all comes in one box.
Right, right.
So it's yeah. And I'm not sure how Hellbores interact with that shielding system.
Yeah, I think it would only look at the outer shields.
I believe so. So
okay. Sorry, I was looking to see if I could find anything on it. that interaction. I don't see anything because right now Hellbores. Hellbores fired in enveloping mode are reduced by VRF. VRFs of all the outer shields. This is done after the division of the valley to apply to the weakest shield. Enveloping Hellbores will be reduced by the VRF as a separate valley from the other direct fire weapons normal. As normal, inner shield is always considered a weaker shield than an outer shield if both are exposed.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, basically, they don't look at the outer shield, but if the outer shield is gone, the inner shield is considered weaker.
Than the inner.
Which, to me, just means it's the outer shield, basically.
Yeah.
No. If the outer shield is gone, it comes in through that outer shield. You don't even consider the inner shield as part of the shield for calculating purposes. Yeah.
Right. Which means that your inner shields are going to get scrambled pretty bad by a Hellbore.
Right.
But on the other hand, they're easier to repair.
Right. And Lord knows,
Hellbore
versus LMC is not exactly fun for the LMC because what you need is a couple of Hellbores and your outer shields are down. You know?
It doesn't. Well. Yeah.
Yeah, because they're not that strong.
Well, it's less strong than an alpha ship, but it's not quite as weak as, say, an Andromeda. Yeah. You've got 83 effective in the front half versus 90. And right. In the rear half, you've got effectively 45, 65 instead of 72.
Oh.
So it's a little weaker.
Yeah. Agreed. But I was just kind of pointing out that because of the outer shields are so much weaker in general, it's going to take probably less damage. So the question is the
and it's a little harder to use specific reinforcement to try to equalize your shields.
Right. Agreed.
On the other hand, any volleys that don't go over the VRF's capability, those shields get a lot stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Moving on to weapon systems.
Right.
We'll start with phasers.
Actually, why don't we start with something a little...
So, the magazine...
Let's start with a generic system, weapon system called Banks.
Banks. Okay. Banks. Well, but we have to discuss they use lasers instead of phasers. And,
right.
Unlike a phaser, the lasers don't have a phaser capacitor. Instead, you have bank boxes.
Right.
Which act as your phaser capacitors.
But
those bank boxes are on the SSD.
Right. So they actually can be destroyed.
And they can be.
And actually.
Independent of the lasers.
And the fun part. Here's the fun part. That I was when I was reading about the banks. And that is that it's considered the best phaser that you've got. So on every third phaser hit,
yes,
your bank, one of your banks goes kablooey.
Correct.
Right, that's per volley.
Correct.
So, you know, still takes a little bit of time to actually,
yeah,
to knock out all of the banks.
Now, the other thing is that you can't fire the lasers directly. You can't power them from batteries directly. You have to use the bank boxes. So
right,
if you run out of bank boxes, you may have lasers left, but you can't fire them.
Right, and then there's the limitation on...
Now, the good thing about the banks...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the banks hold 4 points of energy each.
Right.
So, there's actually more bank capacity than there are lasers on the ship. So you could fire every laser on the ship. If you have a fresh ship, you can fire every laser on the ship and still have some energy left in your bank.
Right, but that assumes that you actually had the energy in the banks to begin with.
Correct, correct. Yeah, fully charged banks. You could fire every laser and still have energy left. The other thing is that any bank box can power any laser on the ship. So
right,
if you think you're going to get damage, fire four points of energy out of your banks. And now if that bank gets destroyed, it's the empty one that got destroyed.
Right. Well, that's another thing you have to do. You must track the banks individually.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Now, lasers, there's two types on that ship. There's medium lasers and what are known as twin lasers. And there's a couple of option mounts that can be either a medium or a twin, your choice. A medium laser is kind of like a phaser one. And a twin laser is a pair of T3s.
Right.
Essentially.
Right. So twin lasers
and
are like two, or two light
lasers,
laser, right?
Or one. They're two light lasers, yes.
Okay.
It's basically a pair of T3s. The light lasers are... and I'd have to look at the damage charts. In some ways, they're a pair of light lasers at shorter ranges will do more damage than a medium laser.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Because at range zero, they'll do a maximum of 5 points of damage while, the range from zero to two, they'll do a minimum damage. Maximum damage of 5 points of damage with a minimum of two.
Wow. On the lights.
Yeah, on the lights versus a medium, which will do
what's
maximum
that?
Of seven,
yeah,
at range zero, maximum six at range two, with a minimum of three at range two, and a minimum of four at range zero.
Right. So the light lasers are very good at short range, or much more power efficient.
Right.
Which is also very typical of P3s versus P1s.
Right.
But lasers are more of a longer range or medium range weapon. They don't hit as hard as phasers at really short range, point blank range, but they don't attenuate as rapidly as the range goes up.
Right.
So even at range 12, you're doing decent damage, and the range brackets are a little bit different than phasers.
Oh yeah. Of course they have to be. Because then once
yeah.
once they duplicate
now,
the range,
one other caveat about
they're just There's those phasers. Yes.
Now, one other two caveats. The lasers are actually quite good at range two compared to especially for drone defense. They're actually optimized for range two.
Right.
You don't get much for range one. And that's kind of important for LMCs because when they're fighting other LMC ships, range two is a very critical range for drone defense, and I'll explain later why. The other thing about lasers is that they are not as well optimized against plasma. They only damage plasma 3-1 instead of 2-1 like regular phasers. So it's a lot harder to shoot down or weaken a plasma with lasers.
Yeah, but aren't there many plasma-based races in LMC? Or at least
correct.
Kinds of weapons. Because I think optimized. The only one I saw was like the Plasma E, or was there something else that I missed?
Yeah. No, I think that's it. Yeah. Who has that? Do you need?
So it's not really that big of a deal, really, for fighting against other LMCs.
Right. Now, one other thing is you had originally pointed out that the bank boxes are the best laser and therefore destroyed every third laser hit.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the nice things about that is that bank boxes are very cheap to repair. The cost to repair, I think, is like 2 points. It's or 2 or 3 points. It's pretty minimal.
Okay. So, yeah, if it's 2 points, then it's equal to a battery.
Yeah. So even though they're easy to destroy, they're easy to get back.
Right.
So in that sense, I think you're... laser system is a little bit more robust than a phaser system because, yeah, you're losing bank boxes are a vulnerability, but they're also mean they're cheap to repair, and it means you have more total weapons boxes in the phaser department.
Right. Basically, one, I agree, there are certain advantages to banks. Obviously, one of them being that if you have less lasers than bank capacity, you actually can charge up your banks and fire the lasers multiple times without needing to recharge them.
Correct. Yeah. The LMC cruiser has how many medium lasers to start?
Well, it depends upon, the question is the option mounts. There are 4 option mounts.
I think it has 4 option mounts, and I think it has, 6 medium lasers?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Yeah.
6,
with decent arcs, I might add.
We're extended, and then you have the forward arc left, forward arc right, and the plano forward half. Interesting.
Right.
It definitely makes sense.
What were the arcs again? Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense that they're the bug race because their ships look like a bug.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, the you have three which are rear extended, which makes things interesting. And you have one which is FA left, the other is FA right, and the last one is front half.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I think the option mounts what, LS and RS?
Yes.
Yeah.
So you have basically
two ways. That I'm doing that all from memory.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah. 10 lasers.
And three bank boxes.
Right. So a total.
And three bank boxes.
Right, right. So a total capacity of 12.
13. Right, but it's 13 phaser style weapons boxes, which is more than most.
Agreed.
In fact, even the Zin, which has, 12 laser or phaser weapons boxes. This is 13.
Yeah, that sounds, that's
really nice.
Oh, agreed.
Now it also has missile weapons, four of them.
Yeah, the
drone style weapons.
Yeah, mass drive. Well, kind of. Wow.
Yeah, well, the mass drivers are an interesting weapon.
Yes.
I think it has a capacity of six ammo. It has ammo just like a drone rack. It would be like a B rack in the sense that it's got capacity of six.
Mm-hmm.
And it can... Now, unlike drones, they have firing arcs.
Right.
And unlike drones, they have a range.
Right.
And I believe. And it's bizarre.
Yeah, it's a bizarre weapon because
they are
it's a mass driver, i.e., it uses energy to launch the seeking weapon, and it's a hyper speed seeking weapon. In other words, it hits you the same turn that it gets fired at you. Now, the announcement of that
same impulse.
Yeah, it hits the same impulse. The announcement of that fire happens before tractors. And they hit.
Yes. Not, well,
let me finish. They hit
at
the resolution of displacement. So it's after all direct fire weapons, and direct fire weapon damage is actually taking place. So it's basically a separate volley.
Right. Yes. And so what happens with Tachyon missiles is you launch them.
Mass drivers.
They move to range two and... Mass drivers, sorry. They launch. They go to range two. They pause. You now have a chance to lab them, tractor them, fire at them with direct fire weapons, use anti-drones against them. I think you can even launch other sinking weapons at them.
That would be kind of
if they're
pointless.
Still around, then they hit.
Right.
What's that?
Which would be, well, regular sinking
weapons. No, I think if you launch a sinking weapon at it, I believe the sinking weapon will hit it.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think even if it's slower, it will hit it before it hits the ship.
Right.
It's one of those weird ship seeking weapons interaction rules.
Yeah. So there's lots of way, and a tractor actually destroys it because it has an endurance of one impulse. So if you grab it in a tractor, it goes away at the end of the impulse. So unlike a drone where you have to hold it turn after turn after turn, this one, the tractor actually destroys it. The downside is that you have to tractor it in range two.
Right, so it's 2 points of power.
So it costs more energy. Yeah. You have four launchers. You can launch one mass driver per launcher per turn, but of course they have to be in arc to fire.
Right.
If you're range 10 or less, you can fire it and fire it again next turn and fire it again next turn.
Right, that's called standard mode.
Over range 10, I think the max standard mode. Right. I think there's an extended mode.
That's when it gets you out the range. Mode, yeah, that gets you out the range 15.
Which is 15?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there, if you can fire it, but then it has to cool down for a turn before you can fire it again. But there's no other penalty for that mode other than there's a cool down.
Right. And no other benefits other than range.
There are. Right. And there's several varieties of mass drivers that you can have in your racks. The most common one is your standard one. I think it does 5 points of damage if it hits a three to kill it. Is that correct?
Yeah. Does an ASM, which is anti-ship missile, does 5 points of damage to all targets.
Yeah. But it only takes three to kill, so it's... In some ways, it's easier to kill than a drone because it takes one less damage, but and it doesn't do as much if it hits. So it's like, if one of them hits, it's like it's not the end of the world like a drone. But on the other hand, you have to shoot it at range two, which makes it a little more difficult to target. There's another version, and I think you only have very limited numbers of those, that only do 3 points of damage if it hits, but it takes five to kill it. And those, it might be worthwhile just letting them through. It's like, it's really a tough target to kill. You have to shoot it at range, unless you're tractoring, which doesn't matter. But it's more difficult to kill, and it doesn't do very much damage at all if it hits. So it's like, let that one pass. Unless it's on a down shield. And then there's a third variety.
Yeah, that's the KSM, kinetic slug missile, what you were talking about.
Yes, that's the armored one.
Yeah, five points of damage to destroy and three points of damage to
target. Five to kill. And there's two other varieties, and I don't remember. There's an anti-fighter one, and there's a weird one.
Charge penetrator missile.
I can't remember the loadout penetrator missile, which is, it does, what? I think it's 3 points to kill it, and it does like
2 points of damage to size class 5 or larger, and 8 points of damage to size class 6. Oh, sorry, that's the anti-missile. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's the anti.
Right.
The anti-fight. It does how much?
The charge penetrator. CPM does 1 point of damage to a shield or PA panel and 2 points of internal damage. If it hits a down shield or shuttle or fighter, a CPM will do 3 points of damage.
Yeah, so it's a little less powerful than the regular one, but it goes through shields. But if you look at the numbers that I gave the Magadium for loadout, that one, there's like very few of them. It's like maybe one or two start scenario losses.
Yeah. With Ken's, they said up to six can be CPMs.
Right, but I think for the tournament cruiser, I limited it even more than that.
Right. Yeah, you said two may be KSMs and up to six may be CPMs or ASMs.
Yeah. CPMs are what?
CPMs. Actually, CPMs are the...
Yeah.
What
was the numbers again?
The penetrators. Up to six.
Yeah, the penetrators. ASMs are up to six CPMs I gave it?
Yep. You only gave it two KSMs.
Oh, wow.
I think you might have screwed that up.
Okay. And...
You might have got those backwards.
And then...
No, I'm looking at the rules.
And then, what was the... I think I put some text on that ship describing what loadouts you can take.
Yeah. I'll read it verbatim.
Can you take...
It says 18 mass drivers on this ship must be ASMs. Of the remaining six, two may be KSMs, and up to six may be CPMs or ASMs. Or sorry, AFMs.
Which are the fighters.
Right.
The anti-fighter ones.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't realize I had given it that many.
I'm reading this, and it looks like it's a duplicate of what Ken had.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you have a total of 24 missiles. Which, but you're not going to be able to fire, unlike a Zinti or some other ships with four drone racks, you can't guarantee that you're going to be able to fire four turn.
Right, because they're not 360.
Because A, the range limit. A, right. They're not 360. B, there's a range 10 limitation, which is actually, for a drone-style weapon, is pretty low.
Yeah,
range.
But here's the thing. It's drone-style to a certain degree. To me, it's more of like a hyper drone, where it lands. It's almost a direct fire weapon because of to me. What defines a drone, an actual seeking weapon, which a drone is that it is mobile terrain, i.e., it is used to modify your opponent's movement. This doesn't do that at all.
Right.
This can be
correct because you can't build a wave of them.
Right. And if you fire, if you launch more than one...
On the other hand...
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, the other thing is that What it's really good for is causing your opponent to hold back on weapons fire.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Agreed.
Another thing you could do is tactic against it is grab one in a tractor and then lad it. You know it's going to go bye-bye, but at least you get to see what you killed.
Agreed.
Yeah. And in fact, lobbing in this is very critical.
Mm-hmm.
But,
or at least doing something to knock it down.
So, that's your seeking. Yeah. So that's your seeking weapons. And then you have your main heavy weapon. Now, that ship only has, is it tachyon guns, I think they're called?
Tachyon beam,
okay. And the tachyon beam is,
interesting
there's
weapon.
Only three of them on the ship.
That's correct.
It is unique. So, it is a single-turn arming weapon. It can be overloaded.
Kind of.
It can be held.
Right.
Although I don't... But you can't hold an overload.
Correct.
And it's... you can fire it twice in a row, but then it has to cool. So it's a fire,
right.
Fire, cool cycle.
Right. And
so you and it can only fire once per turn.
Right. And one thing to remember in that if it's fully charged, you're holding it, that's not considered cooling.
It's not a turn of... That's not considered a cooling turn, right?
Yes.
Now, I don't know if you discharge it, if that, I think if you discharge
that's considered the same thing as firing it.
That's still considering a firing.
Yes, it is.
Yes. Yes.
Now, the interesting part about this weapon is two things when it comes to damage. Number one, how you roll it. There are actually two to hits on the chart. The first to hit will, that number or less, roll, it's 2d6. Any rolls that are that number or less, you have a hit on the facing shield. Now, if there's a second to hit number after the slash, and if you get below that, equal to or below that number, then you also do damage on the opposite shield. The opposite shield. So it's not splash damage, it's opposite shield damage. So if you go through shield number one, and you roll low enough, you hit also hitting shield number four.
Yeah.
Which makes things quite interesting if you think about it. Because I've got I got my down shield facing away from you. Well, if it's directly away from you, you can still hit it with a tachyon beam.
Yes, you can. Although having said that, I think the hit number for the opposite element is like two lower than the hit number for any hit.
Yep.
So unless you're at a fairly close range, you've got a decent probability of a hit, but a fairly low probability or much lower probability of hitting the opposite shield.
Right, right. Agreed. But at the same time, The point being is that, you think you're safe. Yeah, he's got a lot of his weapons available, but you got a fresh shield towards him. But what happens? Well, he'll hit the opposite side, opposite shield.
Yeah.
You know. So if it was down, you know, that means your outer shield is down, and meaning your outer shield and your inner shield are both down for that arc. You can still get internals. You know, it's a nasty little bugger.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree, you know, the minus two, you know, the two difference, it makes a huge difference because of its 2d6.
Yeah. That'd be even worse with 1d6, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, one quick thing about the mass drivers. And that is, there is a two hit. It's 1d6. But here's the thing. Crap, I forgot.
Oh, yeah, if you're close, if you're really close.
Yep. I think it's one or two. It's 3 to 4 to hit. I'm sorry. You have to roll a die.
Range which, one.
You know, a 4 to hit. You know, one through 4 hits. A range 0, it's 1 or 2 hits. They have a 1/3 chance of actually hitting with a mass driver at range 0.
Can a mass driver hit you if you're protected by a wild diesel?
Well, my guess is yes. Because it's not a seeking weapon. It's still true. It's a regular firing weapon, direct fire weapon. But since it's a wild weasel, it still gets the plus two shift. So when the hits are 1 to 4.
Right. Yeah.
So what was an auto hit is no longer an auto hit.
Is there anything in? Is there anything in the rules specifically about wild weasels? Because you could launch a weasel after the mass driver was launched, but before it hit.
Right.
So that's why I'm wondering, is there anything in the rules that says anything about weasels?
Should have something about that. But mass driver will not impact a wild weasel in the same web hex. Okay. What heck is? What am I reading? I don't know. Let's make sure I get this right. Yeah, this is it. Okay. If a wild weasel swack or wild PFS that remains in the same hex as the target protects the target, the mass driver will hit the wild unit. If the wild weasel swack or wild is not in the hex of the intended target, the missiles will miss. Note that the wild weasel can only protect the unit that launched it, and a wild scout PF will only protect the units of his flotilla and his PFT. So, yeah. If you launch
Yeah.
So if you launch a wild weasel, it's going to strike the wild weasel.
Right. On the other hand, because it's basically a direct fire weapon, you could fire them one at a time.
Interesting. Fire control requirements for mass driver. A mass driver missile requires a seeking weapon control channel to be fired. Consequently, a mass driver cannot be fired while in passive fire control or erratic maneuvers.
Yeah.
Wow. Mass driver missiles can have their control transferred to another unit. The unit will accept it. It must be within 35 hexes, of course. The transfer control can only happen voluntarily. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's something that I felt like...
I wouldn't see.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt like I should point out the whole thing about the mass driver, because that was one thing we forgot to mention in covering it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. And as actually pointed out, as a designer note, on the Mahomet Haidin, ships, that is... Their main weapon is the tachyon beams, with mass drivers being more of a minor.
Yes.
It's not the main weapon. It's more of a minor weapon, which is used for basically distracting of phaser fire.
Right. Can you fire mass drivers at drones?
Good question. Wow. Nasty. Fighters. Mass drivers were mounted on fighters. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't see anything yet that says that, oh no, you can't fire at drones. But I was looking for the possibility of maybe it's
fighters.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about, which is heavy weapons modifier.
Oh, against fighters go up the heavy weapons modifier?
Well, no, well, that's a possibility, but I don't see anything mentioned yet.
Oh, okay. Well, I know there is the anti-fighter missile, which you said does 8 points damage to a fighter. Shuttle.
Yes. Oh, there it is. Penalty versus size class 7 targets, i.e. drones. Mass driver missiles cannot be targeted at other class 7 targets, including drones and mines. ME2.618 for the use of seeking weapons and mass driver defense. Okay. Wow.
Okay. So you can fire drones with plasmas at mass drivers, but not the other way around.
Right.
And do they have any penalty against fighters and shuttles?
Let me just double check. don't think so.
Right. And I think you, how many points of damage does the anti-fighter variety do against
them? That does 8 points of damage against the fighter.
And how much against the ship?
Two. You know, just kind of reminder of a dog, like a dogfight drone.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So a fighter could survive one, but it would be pretty badly crippled.
Yep. Okay.
What's the turn mode for the magazine? Is it C or D?
D.
I thought it was D. Yeah. Yeah, not that many.
Yeah, that sucks when it comes to the mass drivers.
Right.
Yeah, you're most
likely
going to be firing like two of those.
How much energy does
it attack at? How much energy does it take for a tachyon? I think it's four.
4 points for a standard? Yeah. And hold cost is what? Two?
Yep.
And overload cost is... Six.
Overloads. Tachyon beam can be overloaded for 6 points of energy from any source. The standard tachyon beam
and
can
if
be
you're
overloaded
already holding a
two
standard,
additional.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you think about it, three tachyon beams. 6 points each is 18 points of energy. So that's two more points of energy than four overloaded disruptors. But it can do quite a bit more damage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially if you get the lower number.
Yeah. So what is the damage and hit numbers for tachyon beams? I forget.
Okay, range zero, it's 11/9 for the two hit numbers, and overloaded, it's 10/10. When it comes to, you know, facing versus opposite. 1 to 3, it's...
So range zero, range zero... One to three, it's hit numbers what?
Hit numbers are 11/9. That's at the hits.
Okay, so it almost certainly is. Yeah. And how much damage does it do?
10/10. Ten facing, 10 on opposite.
Oh, okay. And that's at 1 to 3?
No, that's range zero. 1 to 3 is 10, the hits 10/8. With standard being a 6/6 damage, and if it's overloaded,
yeah.
9/9.
An overload being 9. Okay, so 9/9, and the hit number, as you said, 9. What was it? 9/7 or 10/8?
10/8.
Yeah, that's a nasty spot, because at range 3, if all three of them hit on the facing shield, that's 27 points of damage, which is not quite as much as a disruptor would have done for more energy, but it does have the ability to do up to 27 points of damage.
Facing and away from you.
Opposite.
Yeah, the opposite shield, too.
Yes.
So that means a total of 54 points of damage.
Talk about 54, nasty. 54, you said?
Yeah, 54. 27 plus 27 is 54. Total damage. It has the possibility of the three tachyon beams of doing 54 points of damage at range 3.
Yeah. A direct fire weapon that you can fire again the following turn.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Nasty little bugger.
Yeah, other than the fact that where do you get the power for that? That's a lot of power.
Yeah, it has 39 points of power.
Yeah. And I think you can start the scenario off holding standards.
I have to look at that.
Weapon status 3.
Right, that's what I'm checking because of normally single turn arming weapons don't always are fully ready.
Start armed.
Right, start held.
Yeah.
Weapon status. Tachyon beam is not considered a multi-turn on weapon for purposes
weird.
And consequently cannot begin a scenario held. Bingo. So when it starts...
It's not held.
You have to charge it on first turn. So first turn, you're going to go a little slow.
Yeah. Oh my, I just passed a vehicle. It was a pickup truck towing a boat. Boat lights on the boat were not powered. He missed. I think the power cable the trailer on this boat probably fell off.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, so definitely the Machandim is an interesting empire.
It's got a lot of things it can do. On the other hand, it's not totally overwhelming.
Oh, agreed. Agreed.
Because it's a very very expensive weapon to use, and you can fire it twice. But here's the thing. If you overload it, that counts as, and you can't fire it, that's a discharge. That counts against your arming cycle. You only get two in a row, and then it's like you're in cooldown where it's kind of like a fusion beam after firing. You can't arm it or anything.
Right.
Agreed. When it's cooling down, that's it. It's not arming.
Oh, agreed. And that's something that definitely your opponent can take advantage of. You know?
Well, yes and no. Yes, they can if you push it that far. The other thing is that on the off turn, you may say, I'm not arming it. Leave that as a cool down. And if I do need it at the last minute, I can at least arm a standard on batteries, which, of course, shuts down the short circuits with the cool down for that.
Right. Understood.
Yeah.
Yeah, but even it's just charging it. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't give you a cooldown, but the only thing you have to consider, is that if there is a turn in between firings that is the person using that to cool down or not?
That's Yeah.
And overall,
there's no way to know.
It should be self-evident at the end when you look at how much power they have left over, you know, given how much movement they have. So in theory, you should, if you're paying attention, you should be able to guess whether the next turn is going to be a cooldown turn or not. And Lord knows I'd be doing that.
Right. Okay. Well, another tactic is to go slow, make your opponent think that you put the energy into a arming turn.
That's true.
And meanwhile, that went into shield repair, and the following turn, that was a cooldown. It wasn't a charging turn, but they have no way of knowing if it was cooling down or not.
Yeah, but if you're doing shield repair, it's kind of obvious that you use the power for something. Now, if you just do it for reinforcement,
right,
then there's no way to know.
Right, but why not put in shield repair? And then it's like, okay, yeah, okay.
Yeah, you have to do something with the energy that cannot be tracked.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, that's the,
right.
Which is possibly, you know, the charging banks. You know.
Put it in the banks. Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, it's getting late, so I'm going to let you go. Okay, Barry.
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay.
It's getting late. Of course, I got a long drive ahead of me, but you need to get to sleep. You need to get up for work in the morning.
Yes, I got to get up in 6 hours.
That's all I have to. Yeah, I just have to drive tomorrow to New York, which is a long-ass drive.
Understood.
All right. I'll see you.
Okay.
See you Saturday.
Hopefully.
Bye.
Bye. Yep. So, interesting ship. And obviously part of what we went over was actually just the LMC systems in general. You know, the banks are something that's specific to the LMC, but they're not specific to the Mahadin. And same for the shields. The same thing. So hopefully with future ships that we go over and future empires that we go over that are of the LMC, we will not be going over those again. Therefore, there'll be a lot more time to discuss the systems and overall maybe tactics of using the systems and what to use against them. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.